We're in the middle of Torah Ches and Likutei Moran Tanina. We're coming, we're approaching the end of this Torah. And in our Likutei Morans, we're up to page 41, the left-hand column, the last line on the column, where we begin a new paragraph, where Rabbi Nizal is going to discuss a Gemara at the end of Brachas now. The Gemara over there is talking about, it's the beginning of Perek Haroye, where the Gemara talks about all kinds of different things, which if a person sees this strange item, he's required to make a special bracha thanking Hashem for letting him see such an unusual item. For example, a person who hasn't seen the ocean in 30 days, the Gemara discusses a bracha that's made for it. And one of the items that the Gemara there discusses is that if a Jew sees the special rock that Oig Melech HaBoshan wanted to throw at the Yidden, he has to give a special shevach vaidah to Hashem. This is the wording in the Gemara there. So the Gemara says, what kind of special rock are we talking about? And the Gemara relates the following story. The Gemara says, Rabbein Ezal says, v'zeh, and all of this that we've discussed till now in this chapter of Likutei Moran is also going to serve as a deeper explanation for a story in the Gemara. V'zeh pirish maimar azal. This can also help to explain and to illuminate a story that's mentioned in the Gemara. Because again, the fact that the Gemara bothers to mention this story, when we're going to learn about this story, and it talks about this big stone that Oig wanted to throw at the Jews, and instead of him throwing it, something happened and the stone fell over his head, and this isn't Gemara, this isn't a comic book. In other words, this isn't telling funny stories. If this story is found within the Gemara in such detail that the Gemara bothers to discuss the dimensions of the rock and exactly what happened to prevent it from throwing it and the size of the Jewish nation and everything, there must be tremendous significance to every single aspect of this story, as we find the Marsha and other big tzaddikim used their deep knowledge of Torah and of the wisdom of Kabbalah and other types of knowledge to be able to say pshatim on these stories in the Gemara. Rabbi Nizal is going to give us his pirush based on what we discussed till now. The Gemara says, "Vezeh pirush maim razal al oig melech haboshon." The Gemara discusses oig melech haboshon. The Gemara says there that at one point in time, Omar oig said, "Machane Yisrael kamohavi." How big is the Jewish nation, the Jewish camp? How much space does it take up? When the Jewish camp is moving, how large an area do they take up? The Gemara says, he said, Tloso Parsi. They take up 3 Parsi. A Parsi is about 4 miles. He calculated that the area that the Jewish nation takes up as a whole is 12 miles by 12 miles. And Rashi HaKodesh explains that he learned this based on Psukim and Chumash. The Torah in one place says that the Jewish camp stretched from Bnei HaYishimain till here. And he was able to measure that between these two cities was a distance of 12 miles. 12 miles lengthwise, 12 miles widthwise. So he calculated that the size of Klal Yisrael is an area that's taken up by 12 miles by 12 miles. So the Gemara says, he said to himself, Ezel al go, v'i'akar tura bastlosa parsi, and I will uproot a mountain that also takes up an area of 12 miles by 12 miles. Obviously, this was a very large size mountain. V'ashdi alayhu, and I'll throw it at the Jewish nation. And in this manner, I'll be able to destroy them. Now note, we mentioned many times before in Shiurim that the Torah discusses this concept of Zeh Le'umas Zeh Oselikim, that the powers of Kiddusha and Tumah must always be balanced in order for there to be free choice. If that's the case, whenever we find a situation where the Tumah or different Rishoim attempted to battle and to destroy and to push down the Jewish nation, we find that generally they always used They attempted to calculate and use an equal opposite force to Bnei Israel. We just had this in this Shabbos' Gemara. We're learning Masechet Nedarim, Daf Lamed Tes, where the Gemara over there discusses the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. Lamed Ches or Lamed Tes. The Gemara discusses the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara says, you want to know how great Moshe Rabbeinu was? He almost achieved the 50 levels of wisdom. Nun Sharei Bina. The Pasuk says, Vatechasreyu Ma'at Me'elikim. He was missing a drop from being on the level of Hashem. He almost achieved 50 levels. The Gemara tells us in Megillah that Haman HaRosha wanted to attack the Jews. He wanted to destroy the Jews, and he wanted to make sure that he would be successful in doing it. What did he do? He made a lottery, and when he saw that the lottery came out to the month of Adar, he was excited. He felt that this was a good sign in his favor. Why? Because the month of Adar is obviously a sad month for the Jews, because that's the month that Moshe Rabbeinu passed away in. Moshe Rabbeinu died in Zayin Adar. He felt this was a sign that he was going to succeed. What did he use? What did he hope to use to knock out the Moshe Rabbeinu of that generation, which was Mordechai HaTzadik? The Megillah says he built a tree of 50 amos. Now, the Megillah is part of the Torah. That's part of the written Torah. Would the Torah care if he built a platform that was 50 feet or 50,000? Who cares? What does it have to do with me today? What does it have to do with the Jewish nation? The answer is, Haman was a machashev. Haman nu kishuv. The Arizal says that all of these Rishonim that are mentioned in the Torah throughout Jewish history were all knowledgeable. They were knowledgeable in Shemois HaTumah. Rashi tells us in Chumash that when Avraham Avinu was about to pass away, he left Yitzhak Avinu with the majority of his wealth and his wisdom, but to the Bnei HaPilakshim, to the children, the concubines, to them also he had to give them some inheritance. What did he give them? Shemois HaTumah. He had to teach them a wisdom also that could counter the wisdom of Kedusha, so that there should be this free choice in every generation. So here we see that when Haman wanted to counter the Jews, he picked the month in which Moshe Rabbeinu had fallen, and when he wanted to choose a weapon, how does he calculate? Does he take a 130mm cannon or a 100mm? How do you calculate? The answer is you have to know what levels the Jews aspire for, and you have to pick an equal and opposite force with which to hope to neutralize them. We see here Oig Melech HaBoshan said, what's the size of the Jewish nation? 12 miles, 3 parsi by 3 parsi. I will take another item that's an equal and opposite size to them, and I'm going to use that to crush them. So this, the Meforshim explained that this is why Haman built a tree that was specifically 50 amos high, because he was hoping that he would draw enough tumah into this tree to counter the 50 levels of Bina of Kedusha. The tzaddik of the month of Adar, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara says that he attempted to achieve the 50th level. So we know that's the aspiration in Kedusha. When the Russia wants to counter it, he has to set up a platform of 50 levels of tumah to be able to use to neutralize the Kedusha. This Zeh Le'uma Zeh Osalekim, always. The Azazel, we said. The Azazel is the first letters. Soer Lashem, Soer Lazazel. Zeh Le'uma Zeh. Equal, opposite force. So the Gemara says, Okar Tura, he actually did this. He uprooted this Oig Melech HaBoshan, was so strong, he actually picked up a mountain that was the size of 12 miles by 12 miles. And he put it on his head, in other words, to position it well, to be able to throw it at the Jewish nation, chas v'shalom. The Gemara says, Aisi alei kumtza, just as in the story of King Titus, which we're going to be learning about tomorrow, the next day, Tisha B'Av, we're going to be learning about this big Russia who said he's going to knock out the whole Jewish nation. Hashem said, you're a big tough guy, I'm going to send my tiniest servant to make a mess out of you. And the Gemara says a little worm, a little fly, tzitzi fly, crawled into his brain, and for years he went nuts, just going crazy, because this thing was banging, was eating away at his brain. The Gemara says here also, Aisi alei kumtza, Hashem made these small ants, these ants that bore through stone, to go into this mountain, Vinikve, and they made a hole in this mountain, they made a crack in this mountain in such a way that Vinochis alei atzavore, that the mountain was cracking so he couldn't hold it. It started sliding out of his hand, and it slid over his head, and it came to rest over his shoulders. His shoulders were obviously broad enough to be able to hold this 12-mile mountain on them. The Gemara says, Bo lemishlefe. What he wanted to do immediately was to lift this thing off his head to be able to continue in what he wanted to do. Moshchuha shine lahaygisa ulahaygisa. Hashem made a miracle that his teeth, the upper teeth from his mouth, shot out of his mouth. They started moving, they started growing and becoming elongated to such an extent that his teeth, now remember, this wasn't a normal sized person, this was Oig, we'll see in a minute how big he was, His teeth were obviously tremendous size. His teeth started extending from his mouth into the mountain in such a way where it locked into the mountain, so that now when he tried to pull the mountain off his head, he couldn't because his teeth were stuck in there and they were holding the mountain stuck on over his head, on resting on his shoulders. The Gemara says, Moshe Kamohavi, how tall was Moshe Rabbeinu? Eser Amin. Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amos tall, approximately 20 feet tall. Shokal Nargo Bas Eser Amin, he took a hatchet or a stick that was also 20 feet tall. Vishovar Eser Amin, and he jumped 20 feet into the ground, 20 feet high, 10 amos high. Umachye Bikarsule, and he struck Oig at his ankle, the Katle, and he killed him. This was 60 feet into the air. Moshe Rabbeinu was 60 feet up. In other words, he was 20 feet. He jumped 20 feet, and his stick was 20 feet, and he hit real hard, and he struck Oig at his ankle, and he killed him. Now, tell this to kids. They're going to say, this is silly. This doesn't rate going into a comic book or a funny jokes book because it sounds so far-fetched and abnormal, etc. Why would this appear in the Gemara? The answer is there has to be Musar and information about Klal Yisrael and about Torah to be able to be gleaned from this. Rabbi Nizal explains now in a very deep way, in a manner that's going to explain, that's going to review everything we had till now. Ki oig hoyo achizosoi biyamin. We know that Oig's attachment was from the right side. The Zohar HaKadosh explains that when Moshe Rabbeinu came to battle against Oig Melech HaBoshon, he was very scared of Oig, because Oig was unique in that Oig came from the family of Avraham Avinu, the Zohar HaKadosh says. When the Torah tells us about a polit, one person who remained from the destruction of the city of Sodom, who came running to tell Avraham Avinu, not from the destruction of Sodom, who came to tell Avraham Avinu that his nephew Lot had been captured, etc. The Gemara and the Zohar HaKadosh say that this was Oig Melech HaBoshon, who was saved from the Mabul. He was so big that he was able to hold on to the outside of the Teva, and the waters were cool around there. He was able to survive, and he was the one who did a favor for Avraham Avinu. So he was classified to be under the protection of Avraham Avinu. We know that Avraham Avinu in the Torah is called Ish HaChesed, the man of kindness, which means Avraham Avinu represents the right side of Kedusha. The right side is always Chesed, the left side is Din. So the Zohar HaKadosh tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu came to do battle against Oig, Moshe Rabbeinu was scared, because although Oig was a Rosho, he was afraid that the fact that Oig had received a Bris Milah, the Torah tells us that when Avraham Avinu gave himself a Bris Milah, he also malad all the members of his household. He also gave them a Bris Milah, which obviously must have included Oig Melech HaBoshon. And this made Oig under the wing of Avraham Avinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that there was a chance that he would not be able to overcome Oig, because Oig had this achiza on the right side. He has this attachment to Avraham Avinu, represents the right side. The Pasuk says that Hashem said to Avraham Avinu, Al Tira Oisai, don't be afraid of him. Al Tira Oisai, don't be afraid of his Ois, his Bris Milah. Ois is called Bris Milah. Why? Ki biyodcho nosati Oisai. The Zohar HaKadosh says that the word Yodcho refers to the left hand. The Zohar HaKadosh brings proof from Sukkim to show that the word Yodcho, when it's used in the Chumash, refers to the left hand. Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, as great as he is, you should know that your left is going to be more powerful, your weaker hand is going to be more powerful than his most powerful hand, than his right. And the Zohar HaKadosh shows how he was able to defeat him. So we see from this, regardless, that Oig represented the right side of Kedusha. He drew, his achiza, his drawing power, his yanika, was from the right side. And Oig drew from the seichel of Kedusha, from the wisdom of Kedusha. Why? This is based on a statement in the Tikkuni Zohar, where the Tikkuni Zohar associates the right side with seichel, with das, because the Tikkun Ezer says, "Ki misitro diemino meicho chivro kikaspo." On the right side of the Shechina Kaviyachol, the brain there is white like silver. It has a silvery glow to it. So we see that the right side represents the sinyan of the moyach of kedusha, the brain power, the das. The Alkanan, therefore, rotzol his gabral Yisrael. This is why, because Oig had an attachment to Kedusha, and in order for him to survive, he had to be able to draw from Kedusha. Therefore, he wanted to try to overcome the Jews and to be able to take all their energy and use it for himself. This is why the Gemara says, he said, Machane Yisrael Kamohavi Tlosa Parsi. How big is the Jewish nation? 3 Parsi. Machane Yisrael, the fact that the word Machane Yisrael is used versus Klal Yisrael or Bnei Yisrael, why does it use the word Machane Yisrael specifically? Rabbi Nezal says, Zebechinas Kedushas HaMachane Shel Yisrael. This refers specifically to the holiness of the Jewish nation. As we see, Bechinas, as the Pasuk says in Chumash Dvorim, V'hoyo Machanecho Kodosh, that the Jewish camp is required to be holy, and the Pasuk there in Chumash is talking about Tikkun HaBris, pure specifically in relations with women, no adultery, no marrying, illicit relations. So we see that the word Machane is used specifically in the context of Kedusha, holiness. V'ikr Kedushas Machane Yisrael v'alidei shmiro mitayvas niyuf. The main holiness of the Jewish camp comes by watching themselves from the illicit desire with women, mibechinas mikro laila chas v'shalom, from that sin, that type of accidental sin that takes place with a person at night. K'may shekosov shom beparsha, as it says over there in Chumash Dvorim, where it uses this pasuk v'hoyo machanecha kodosh, over there the pasuk is talking about in context of mikre laila, that's where the Torah warns against that sin and against all types of adultery. V'ikra hashmira mitayvazu, Rabbein Azal had explained earlier in this chapter that what's a Jew's main defense system against this taiva? Hu al yidei b'chinois tloso parsi. It's 3 curtains. It's a set of 3 partitions that a Jew is supposed to set up that protect him from this. Hainu tlas moichin. This refers to the 3 parts of the brain. Shekol echod ve'echod hu mechitza prusa b'fnei taivazu kanal. Each and every section of the brain, each and every spiritual section of the brain symbolizes a partition that blocks the person from being slaughtered, from the onslaught of tumah, trying to slaughter him with hirhurim roim, with all kinds of bad thoughts. We're supposed to picture the 3 parts of the brain, the chokhma, bina, and das, as 3 partitions, 3 walls, each one serving as a barrier from hirhurim roim, from pegama bris. Rabbein Azal says, Vezehu, this is why Oig said, Machane Yisrael Kamohavi. How big is the Jewish nation? Tlosa Parsi. The greatness of the Jewish nation is 3 Parsi. Hainu, he meant to say that he realized that Ikra HaKedusha Shel Machane Yisrael, the main holiness, the totality of holiness of the Jewish nation, Sheyihyu Kedoshim Mitayvazu Mimikra Laila Chas V'Shalom, that enables them to be pure from this taiva, from this evil desire, Hu Al Yidei Bechinas Tlosa Parsi, is only the only item that protects and maintains their holiness is the 3 parts of the brain, Hainu Tlas Meichim Shein Mechitza Prusa Befnei Hataivahu, which serves as a spread out curtain. The word Parsi means a certain measurement. The word Parsi also means prusa, spread out, like a curtain that's blocking something from going through. So he said, how great is the Jewish nation? How powerful is the defense system of the Jewish nation against Taivas Niyuf? Their defense system is 3 Parsi big. It consists of 3 walls, the Gimel Meichen, that block these Hirhurim Roim and everything. Ezel, therefore, I will go, v'i'akar turabastlos aparsi alaprut, a mountain that's comparable size, v'ashti alayhu, and I'll throw it at them. Tura, a mountain, the fact that he used the word mountain specifically, zebechinas hatfila, this refers to tfila. Note, interestingly, again, how every single chiddush that you learn in Torah comes to use. Rabbi Zal once said a set of chidushim. We're not going to go into the whole thing now because it's too long. But for those who are familiar, it was based on the word machane, the concept of the building of the Beis HaMikdosh, a concept of the erecting of the Beis HaMikdosh, and how each one of the big tzaddikim was zeichet to set up one wall of the Beis HaMikdosh. We know that the first wall was established by Shlomo HaMelech, this is in spiritual terms, and a wall of Kedusha is referred to as a machane. Here we're going to see that the word wall, the word for a wall of Kedusha is called a machaneh. As we see that when Yaakov Avinu needed to be protected from Esav Harosha, talking about a protection, Esav was coming to attack him with his 400 men. At that point in time, Yaakov Avinu saw a machaneh elikim, vayomer machaneh elikim zev, vayikro shem amokam ahum machanoim, and this is what guaranteed him that he was going to be protected from the ra'ayin of Esav, the 400 men. So it's brought that machaneh, the number machaneh, is 103. That's what Shlomo HaMelech established. When Avraham Avinu found out that Shlomo HaMelech was going to build a Beis HaMikdash, he wanted to offer his contribution to this. Therefore, he decided that he's going to put up the second wall of the Beis HaMikdash. We know that twice machaneh, two times machaneh, is bigimatria har, the word har. And this is why it's written about Avraham Avinu, ki behar Hashem yeroe. The Gemara says that Avraham Avinu served Hashem on the mountain. Yitzchak Avinu saw what his father had done, and he decided, why shouldn't I extend this procedure? Therefore, he decided to erect the third wall of the Beis HaMikdash, which was three times machaneh, which is bigimatria sodeh. The pasuk says, the Gemara says that where did Yitzchak Avinu serve Hashem? In the field. Vayetze Yitzchak lasuach basode. The main avoid of Yitzchak was that he brought the holiness of Hashem. Avraham Avinu had to go way, way out on the mountain to serve Hashem. Yitzchak Avinu brought Hashem a little bit closer into the field. A field is less distant from the home than a mountain. Yaakov Avinu decided to be the one to erect the fourth wall of the Beis HaMikdash. He wanted to bring the Kiddush of Hashem still closer. The whole concept of the Beis HaMikdash is V'shochanti b'seicham, bringing the Shekhinah among us. Yaakov Avinu brought it still closer. The Gemara says, where did Yaakov Avinu serve Hashem? In a bayis. Vayikro shem hamokim ahu, Beis Kel. He proclaimed the place where he served Hashem as a bayis. The word bayis is four times machaneh. Moshe Rabbeinu saw what these four tzaddikim had done. He figured, this is it. They haven't left anything for me. They've set up four walls. If a person is encircled on four sides, he's completely protected. But there's a pasuk in Navi that says that when Hashem is going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, where is the destruction going to come from? Mimoraim sholach esh. Hashem is going to send down a fire from above to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. That's the wording in the pasuk. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu said, there is something for me. I'm going to erect the fifth wall, which is the roof of the Beis HaMikdash. That's the fifth wall. And Moshe Rabbeinu's outstanding feat was this week's parsha, Vo'eschanan el Hashem bo'isahi leimar. The word Vo'eschanan, the Gemara says, is 515 tefillos that Moshe Rabbeinu was mispalel. Vo'eschanan is bigematria five times machaneh. So we see that machaneh is this level of kedusha. But what did he use to counter with? What did he try to use to counter with? A har. He picked up a mountain. Tura, Rabbi Nezal says, he picked up a tura. Tura, zebechinas hatfila. Tura is a har, which is twice machaneh. He wanted to pick up something that could easily knock out this machaneh of kedusha. He picked up a mountain. Rabbi Nezal says, a mountain is a concept of tefillah. Bebechinas, as the pasuk says, Hashem says, v'haviyosim el har kodshi, v'simachtim beveis tefilosi. I'll bring the Jews to my holy mountain, and there they will pray to me. So we see that this the mountain represents a mokim of tefillah, a place of tefillah. Rabbi Nezal says, v'zeh bas tloso parsi. This is what it means when it says he picked up a mountain that was three parsi large also. Ki hatfilah nimsheches gam kein migimel moichim. We explained in the beginning of this chapter that tefillah also comes from the Gimel Meichim, Shehem Mechitzais Prusais, which are these walls, Shemisham Nimshach Gimel Minei Rachmonis. We said that the Gemara says that Iker Horachmim Toli Bedas, that Rachmonis, kindness, is dependent on Seichel. According to how much Seichel you have, you're able to interpret what's considered kindness and compassion and what isn't. And we said that kindness is Tefillah, because there's a Gemara that says, Al Tas Tefiloscho Keva Elor Rachmim v'tachnunim. Rachmim means kindness, that your tefillah is supposed to be rachmim. So we see that tefillah is called rachmim. Rachmim is dependent on seichel. So just like seichel, there are gimel meichin. tefillah also, there are three tefillahs. The rachmim is also split up into three units. This is how we had explained in the beginning of the Torah, the association between the tefillah and the seichel. The seichel is broken out into these three divisions. That's das. Rachmim is dependent on das. We said without das, you don't have rachmonis. Tefillah is called rachmim. So tefillah is also in the form of three, the three basic tefillahs, shachris, mincha, and mariv. Rabbi Nizal says, Shemishom nimshach gimel mine rachmonis. From these three parts of the brain comes forth these three types of rachmonis, Shehem bechinas gimel tefillahs bayoim, which is the whole concept of why we have three tefillahs every day. Hainu, this means shehasidrachro, the soton, sheesh lo yinikum in adas, chas v'shalom, which draws from the seichel. We said before that when a person ever allows the soton to creep into his brain, Rabbi Nizal explained earlier what this means, and the soton is able to draw from the Jewish mind, bechinas oig, as represented by oig, who was a rosha, a klipa, he roitze lakoy chas v'shalom tefilas Yisrael. The soton wants to uproot the tefilas of the Jewish nation, lahamshi, to draw them to himself, and to swallow them up, as we explained early in this chapter. The Satan wants to try to, once he grabs onto the Das and he's able to draw from there, he tries to grab onto the Gimel Tfilois and swallow them up, gobble them up, and have them for himself. Vizesh Omar, now Rabbi Nizal is going to explain a very, very interesting point that has to be known about the whole concept of Kedusha versus Tumah. Rabbi Nizal says, V'zeh sha'omar v'ashdi alayhu. This is why Oig used the wording, I will throw it at them. Note, he didn't say, he said, I'll throw it at them. Why? Rabbi Nizal explains, Ki ikor ritzaynoi hu rak lahamshich elof tfilois Yisrael lehisaches bohem. The Satan, whenever he tries to draw Kedusha onto himself, his purpose is only to grab hold of it and to suck out whatever he can suck out in a couple of seconds. Aval achakach, but afterwards, kishehem etzlei chas v'shalayim, when these tefillos have been gobbled up by the Satan, or when this Kedusha has been gobbled up by the Satan, azai merutzo lachzor lashlichem al Yisrael, he's more than happy to throw it back to the Jews. Why? Ki me'achar shekvar yonak mehem, once he has drawn from it, once he has taken from it whatever he needs, azai then, afal pi shehu me'atzmoi machzir u'mashlichem le'Yisrael, although he himself actually returns this package of Kedusha to the Jewish nation, adayon heim pigumim, this package is now completely spoiled, al yidei sheyesh lo yinik mehem, through the fact that the Sultan was able to draw from this in so solid a way, ki rachmei reshoim achzori kanal, because we had explained earlier in this chapter that the rachmonis that comes from an achzor is rachmei reshoim, the rachmonis that comes from a rosha is achzori, it's achzorius, meaning once the rachmonis has fallen into the hands of the rosha, when he returns it, it's no longer classified as rachmonis anymore. He has spoiled it and converted it to rachmonis, so that when he returns it, it looks like he's giving you back what you gave him, but really it's not. It's become so spoiled, so perverted, where now it's medame. It only appears to be rachmonis, but it's really achzorius. V'al kein, and therefore, kishehu yoinek chas v'shol meharachmonis o mitfilois Yisrael, once the Satan has been able to draw from the rachmonis and from the tfilois of the Jews, afal pishehu noisno me'atzmoi l'Yisrael, although he himself gives it back to the Jewish people, afal pikein heim pigumim, they are spoiled, al yidei achizose bem kanal, through the fact that he was able to latch onto it in so solid a way, and to be able to draw from it much more than he normally would, therefore it's become spoiled anymore. It's of no good to us anymore when he returns it. V'zeh shomar, this is why Oig said, va'ashdi alayhu, I'll throw it at them, I'll pull up this mountain, I will uproot these three levels of Kedusha, and I'll do with it what I want to do with it. I'll lift it up, meaning to lift something up is Kabbalas Kinyan. That's how a Jew takes ownership. One of the examples in the Gemara of taking ownership of an item is Kinyan Hagbah, picking it up. I'll take this mountain, I'll pick it up. That'll show that I've taken it to myself now. Once I've taken it to myself, then I'll throw it back to them, because then it won't do them any more good. Why? Ki acharkach v'ze shomar v'ashti alei, I'll throw it at them. Ki acharkach sheyakrim v'yivleim chas v'shalom. Once he has uprooted it and swallowed it, hu roitze lachzor l'ashlicham l'Yisrael. He wants to return it to the Jews. Ki kvar heim pegumim al yodoi kanal. Because they've already become completely spoiled through him. Ki me'achar she'asit rachro lo nechnas rak me'atzmo hi machzeres l'Yisrael. Because of the fact that the Satan was not pushed down, he wasn't smashed by the Jews. Elamai, he gave in on his own willingly. In other words, the fact that this wasn't taken away from him, the fact that he's returning it willingly, al kein heim pigumim. That's what determines whether the item is spoiled or not. Meaning, when the Satan, Rabbeinu Zal is telling us here, that whenever the Satan grabs hold of an item of Kedusha, and then a Jew girds himself and grabs it back out of the hands of the Satan, that item that's taken back is holy, it's good, it's not spoiled. Whenever the Satan is able to hold on to something long enough where he does his thing and then he returns it, now when you get it back, there's no way in the world you're getting back what he originally took. He has definitely spoiled it already, and now it's lost already, period. Rabbeinu Zal says, "Avol kishemaitzien mimeno bal korchoch." But when a Jew is zeichet to pull it out of the Satan's ownership against his will, alidei matei oiz kanal, through the stick that we discussed earlier, meaning that tefila bebechinas din, azai hasitrachro nichnas legamri. Then the Satan is subdued and knocked out completely. Ve'oz chayzer hakoil el hakdusha bishlemus. And then whatever is extracted from him comes back complete, 100% intact. V'hovein hanal. And understand this very well, because this is a yisoid in Chochmas Lemes. This is a yisoid in knowing how to deal with the Sotan. That whenever the Sotan robs a Jew of mitzvahs or other things, the Gemara tells us that there are certain things he can do. A person can fall into kas, where when a person gets angry, he loses his temper. All his mitzvahs are swallowed up by the Satan. If he lets it stay in the ownership of the Satan for too long, Rachmon al-Etzlan, then even if the Satan gives it back afterwards, it's finished. There's no way he can restore the Kiddusha, those mitzvahs. It's gone. Whereas if he's zeichet to be, as the Gemara says, koshe lichois, v'noyach l'ratzois, there's a special mitzvah of being quick to be appeased. Hurry! Be quick to get rid of your anger. Why? Because if you're quick, you can grab it back. You can grab back what the Sultan took away from you fast. And if you get it fast, before he returns it willingly, then the Sifrei Kabbalah tell us, Va'oz chayzer ha'koil el ha'kdusha b'shleimus. It's conceivable to be able to grab it back intact without losing the whole item. This is why Zerizus is so important. Rabbeinu Zal brings in another Torah for a Baal Tshuva especially, one who has fallen. When he wants to come back, he's got to run very fast. Why? Because time is of the essence. Because if the Sultan is able to hold on to him for too long, then there could come a point in time where the Sultan says, I'm finished with you. Now I'm ready to give you back to the Jewish nation, chas v'shalom. And at that point, it won't help anymore. Because the Sultan has used him to such an extent, chas v'shalom, that it's very, 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 very hard to be able to restore whatever was in there originally, the Kiddusha that was in there originally.
Are you implying that there is a certain time that comes beyond which it's too late?
To an extent, definitely, most definitely.
Does the grabbing back help, say, at any point in time? Let's say a person makes a move, with the fact that he's, who knows, are you implying that the fact that he's grabbing it back rather than passively letting it go, does that act itself?
Who can support this from a Gemara in Chagiga? If we study the story of Acher, Acher is a perfect example of this. Acher was a tzaddik who went south, who went sour. He spoiled, he became an apikiris. The Gemara says he went up to heaven, he saw a certain thing, and it caused him to become an apikiris. And the Gemara says he became so disliked by Hashem, so distant from Hashem, that Hashem said, Shuvu banim shayvavim chutz me'acher. There was actually a baskel that came out and said, everybody else can come back except you. What does Tosfos say? So if that's the case, he has a legitimate claim. He could have said that Hashem said not to come back. Tosfos says, baloney. He should have forced the issue. Taisa says if he would have forced, again, this use of force, that's what's being implied, that up until a certain point in time, it's possible to return normal. Once you procrastinate and you let that point in time go by, then should you want to come back, it takes a tremendous use of force. A tefillah bebechinas din. It takes a power. Now you got to crash through because now you've given time for the cement to settle in this wall, this barricade that they put up not to let you go back in. Now you want to go in, you got to come with enough power to be able to crash through a brick wall and go flying in. If you do it, you're in. So in other words, no question at all that the bottom line is that there's never a point of no return. There doesn't exist any such thing. But there are different points where once a person crosses this milestone, Rahman al-Islam, now he enters into a different scope where for him to come back is going to be much, much harder. It requires an unusual siyata dishmaya, an unusual kind of effort.
We've seen that what happened with Acher is opposite to the kind of sequence that should have taken place. It should have been that once Acher, in a sense, was used up, so come on back, it should have been made easy for him because at this point all this kedusha was gobbled up. So why wasn't in fact that the procedure?
The answer is, in a sense, it was. This statement, this baskel, wasn't made way at the end. The baskel was made right after he did his sin. Right after he did his sin, there was a test. There was a barricade set up. He did a sin. Now, if you want to come back, it's going to be difficult. A baskel came out and said, "Shuvu banim shevim chutz me'achir." This was his test. Now, if he would have forced the issue right then and came back, he would have succeeded. He didn't. He let time go by. The pasuk says, "Miyazveko yoimam yoimayim tazveko," that when it comes to kedusha, when a Jew takes a step away from the kedusha takes an additional step away from him. So he distances himself every day 2 days worth of travel, chas v'shalom. So that now it became difficult. In the end, we find that Rabbi Meir and other people did come to him and begged him to come back. There's no question at all that at a certain point they were begging him to come back. And at that point in time, it took a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous use of force to pull him back. The Gemara says, who pulled him out of Gehenna in the end? Rabbi Yochanan. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan was praised. The Gemara says that when they made a hesped for Rabbi Yochanan, they said, imagine how powerful Rabbi Yochanan was, that he wasn't even afraid of the Shemrei Gehenna. He was able to walk past the guards of Gehenna and pull somebody out of there and bring him into Gan Eden. But we see that the Gemara describes that as a tremendous use of force. That shows that that was not normal. That once it went that far, it took a tremendous, tremendous tikkun to be able to bring him back. You understand how it coincides with what we're
doing? How do you know when why do people go out and look for Balei Tshuva? If in point of fact, a lot of them may be in the category where they've been dried up.
This is why Rav Nosson Zal says in Likutei Halacha is that there are two approaches to dealing with Balei Tshuva. There are people who say that Balei Tshuva just go out in the streets and just look for them, find them, and grab them. And Rav Nosson Zal says that that's contrary to a law in Shulchan Aruch. There's a law in Shulchan Aruch that's mentioned in the Gemara, in Beya, and in many other places. The Gemara says, Ein mevatlin isur lechatchila. That the law in religion is always, you're never, there are certain situations where if treif falls into kosher under certain circumstances, if there's enough kosher there, it can knock out the treif. In some cases it's a roiv, in some cases it's 60 times as much, in some cases it's 960 times as much, but if it falls in by itself, by accident, there is a potential by building up enough good to knock out the bad. Whereas for a Jew ever to take Isur and throw it into Heter, and thereby to try to make it kosher, that you're never allowed to do. You're never allowed to take a piece of unkosher meat and throw it into a pot. That's called Ein Mevatlin Isur Lechatchila. You're not permitted to take a Dover Osur and make it, try to nullify it, Lechatchila, meaning by yourself, for starters. Bidi Ovad, if it happened by itself, there's a whole set of rules that we go by where if there is enough, depending on how tamei the item is, depending on how treif it is, that's what determines what kind of quantity you need to knock it out, to neutralize it. And Rav Nosson Zal says that this is a message in dealing with Balei Tshuva, that there is a concept of being selective. There is a degree of selectivity where a rabbi has to pick. The Gemara says that if a rabbi teaches a Talmud She'enoi Hogon, If a rabbi teaches a student who's not worthy of being taught, it's like writing a Sefer Torah, chas v'shalom, on an oyer behema tameya, on the skin of a chas v'shalom a pig, or something like that, which is considered a big sin. You're only allowed to write a Sefer Torah on the oyer of a behema tameya, an ox, a cow, those things that are kosher. This is the same concept in teaching students. So there are Balei Tshuva whom you're not supposed to deal with. Our Rebbe, Zichron Levracha, was once presented with a situation. He was given an offer to go into the Jewish theological cemetery and teach over there. They told him, you can teach anything you want. We're willing to let you teach Hasidus, Gemara, Kabbalah, anything you want. And at first he was tremendously excited. You know, this was such a... He figured he'll convert the whole Jewish theological seminary. He'll make them all Orthodox from. And he felt confident. And he asked his rabbis for advice. He sent a letter to Eretz Yisrael to his rabbis at the time, asking them. He was given this offer, and they cautioned him, and they told him, definitely not. You want to set up a yeshiva for Balei Tshuva? Fantastic. Set it up on your turf. Set up a class. Put up a sign, welcome. Whoever, if that whole theological cemetery decides to show up, you take them on, you teach them, and you'll be successful. But to go into their place and try to do it over there, that is not permissible.
Isn't that what Mashiach is supposed to do?
Yeah. Isn't that what Mashiach is supposed to do?
He's supposed to go down into the very...
The answer is, Mashiach is the one who is going to be so great, and at that time, the Kedusha is going to be so overwhelmingly powerful that he's not going to be taking any risk. There won't be any risk factor whatsoever. Whereas we today, even tzaddikim, there is caution, depending on what level the person is. The Gemara says, tzaddik mimenu baileya, that a rasha cannot swallow up a tzaddik gomor, a tzaddik who is literally 100% perfect. There doesn't exist a rasha that can swallow him up. But tzaddik mimenu, there's a pasuk, kivala rasha, tzaddik mimenu, as a rasha swallows up one who is more righteous than him. The Gemara says, one who is more righteous than him, he can swallow up. One who is perfect, he can't swallow up. Which tzaddik can say that he's perfect? You understand? Therefore, there is this selectivity, that according to how great a tzaddik determines what level he's on, that's what way he determines how low he's permitted to go into the pit to be mekar v'chaykin. Because Rabbeinu Zal says, when a person is oisik in this, the ra that's coming, in other words, he's doing a cleaning process. These people come into his shir with mud all over them. He's holding a hose, he's hosing down these people, washing off the mud. When you're hosing off a whole load of mud, there's a potential for some of that mud to splash onto the one that's doing the hosing. Rabbeinu Zal says that a person who's being oisik in this avodah, there definitely is an element of sakona involved, that while he's trying to rid these people of their midos rois and taivos rois, there's a tremendous potential of some of that latching onto him. And therefore, Rabbeinu Zal has a Torah, Heichal HaKodesh, and other Torahs, where he discusses how careful, how much preparation has to go into this procedure, that this is a very sensitive, delicate operation. Yes, lahavdol. In other words, that's not a mokoim of tumah, a mokoim where they teach against Gemara. It was people who were far from Kedusha. Rabbeinu Zal has a chapter in the Kutim Ran where he discusses that there are times when the tzaddik goes out to the people, there are times when the people come to the tzaddik. We find by Moshe Rabbeinu, we find different examples where there does exist this concept of the tzaddik going out, but it depends where.
In other words, it could be a case where the people aren't like,
Exactly.
And this would explain how Rabbeinu Zal was able to be part of the three philosophers because of his madrigal.
Exactly. Because he was the tzaddik gomor whom the Gemara talks about. He was actually permitted. Rabbeinu Zal has a turn in the Kutamaran Teres Samach Beis, where Rabbeinu Zal talks about the cholo haponoi, that there's a place where there's such a level of philosophy that nobody could penetrate. But, except... there's one tzaddik in every generation, the one who is Bechinas Tzaddik Gomor, where for him there's a special mitzvah for him to go into there and to be able to affect the tikkunim that have to be affected there. Not on the same level as Rabbeinu Zal, but certainly to a degree. In other words, even the leading tzaddik today certainly is the one who's most in a position to do this. But we understand that as the generations on a smite, the koyach of tzaddikim is also on a smite. No question. Rabbeinu Zal says, Ozal, Oig went, Okar Tura, he uprooted a mountain, Bastlosa Parsi, that was this three Parsi big, Va'isve Bereshe, and he put it over his head, over his head. Hainu Shehizgaber, this Oig strengthened himself in Tuma, Va'okar Tfilois Yisrael, and he was actually able to uproot the tefillahs of the Jews, Shehem Bechinas Tura Bastlosa Parsi Kanal, which are referred to as a mountain, V'havioisim al-har kodshi v'simach v'esfilasi, a mountain of three. This is another term for tefillah, meaning, for example, whenever a Jew davens a tefillah without the proper kavona, other cases, it leaves an opening where if the satan tries to grab hold of that tefillah, he can grab hold of it and take it to himself, chas v'shalom. There is such a concept. V'oisve bereshe, he took this mountain and placed it upon his head. Shehim shich ha-tfilois. This oig drew these tfilois, shehim b'chinas das v'rachmim, which are a concept of das and rachmonis, as we explained earlier in the Torah. He drew them l'toich horoish v'hamoyach sheloi, into his head, into his brain. Oig drew this into his roish. Now we know that there is a concept of roish by the Rishonim also. What did Esav say? Yesh li rov, ochi. I also have a rov. I also have a roish. I also have a leader. Shezeh bechinas v'hanochosh hoyo orum kanal. We find there's an actual pasuk in the Torah that says that the snake was very sharp, was very smart, in a wicked sense. So we see there is a concept, the Gemara says, that we should, if a person tells you that there's this by the Goyim, don't believe it. But if a person tells you that there's Chochmah by the Goyim, believe it. So we see by the Satan, there is this concept of a Roish and a Meichim. And when the Satan grabs hold of this Das, this Tfilois, he's able to draw it into his Roish and Moyach. We'll hold it over here for now. It's Hashem. We'll continue next week. We're going to have the second half of this story. But this just gives you an idea. Picture how lucky we are that these tzaddikim were kind enough to share some of this knowledge with us, that now when we go back to learning Gemara, and the Gemara tells us there are hundreds of these types of stories in the Gemara, we know that don't just take it as it appears on the surface, that there's a tremendous, tremendous depth in this, as we see. We're just getting started here. Wait till Rabbeinu Zal shows how everything we said in this chapter on the Gut Imran is hinted to in this story. Halavai, we should be zeichet to learn Torah the right way, and to be able to achieve everything that could be achieved in the process of learning Torah the right way.
In the category of the three, we need the three tefillos every single day.
Exactly, the basic three tefillos of Shacharis Mincha Maariv.
How was Sicha killed?
How was Sicha? Through Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu knocked out both Sichain and Oig. But the Zohar Kodesh says that Sichain he wasn't as much afraid of as much of Oig, because by Oig, the Torah writes clearly that, in other words, he was the one who had this Ois Bris from Avram Avinu, and he was Achizosoi V'yamin. The word Oig itself, as it's regular spelled, Ayin Gimel is Bigimatria, this Chochmah, Chesed, you understand? This 73, which is Chochmah or Chesed with the Kohel, showing that he was this right side. In other words, he was the one who was really in an unusual position to be able to do harm. The Gemara doesn't tell us such a story about Sichain, you understand? The Gemara only mentions about Oig, that Oig was the one who conjured up this whole plan, whereby he understood the Kiddush of Klal Yisrael, and he actually set himself up to try to knock them out, Rachman
Olatzim. So that, what was his main reason to knock out Bnei Yisrael?
Because he was on the side of Tumah, on the side of Klipa. It's Zeh Le'umaseh. When the Jews are up, he's down. In other words, for the Jews to get into Eretz Yisrael meant stomping over him. They had to walk in over his dead body. He was the one who was protecting. We said the Shabbos that the 31 kings of Eretz Yisrael had hired these two, Sichain and Oig, to live right at the boundary of Eretz Yisrael, knowing that the Jews were going to try to get into Eretz Yisrael, and this is what they were going to use to block them. In the end, Moshe Rabbeinu knocked these two out completely, and the Jews were able to walk in straight to Eretz Yisrael over the dead bodies of Sichain and Oig and their whole countries.
So by him being a shamish of Avraham Avinu, didn't he think that the Jews were something enough to be able
Bilam. Didn't he know a lot? We said that Rav Moshe Zal has a whole discussion in Likutei Halacha showing how these Rishonim, although they know a lot, the fact that there exists a potential by Hashem whereby a person can draw from one side or from the other side. You have the option. You can either draw from Kedusha via the Torah, via the Tzadikim, via the Emunas Chachamim, or there is a side of Tumah through which you can draw from Hashem, which is a completely different route. These Rishonim figure that that's the easier way, or the better way, or it's just as good. And that's where their mistake comes in. That although there exist these two paths, there's no question at all. Re'ei, Hashem says Re'ei, Hachayim v'amoves nasati lufanecha. I give you two choices. U'bocharta b'chayim. Don't be an idiot. Don't make an... Of course I want you to take this path. And this is where they all get tripped up. They see that, in other words, riding on this side I do okay, riding on this side I do okay. And on this side it looks even better, more attractive, because right now the goyim are on top, the tumah's on top. It looks like that's the more attractive path to take. But they don't know that, wait a little, that the end is going to be in the favor of Bnei Yisrael, in the favor of Kedusha. Think there's no tolerance. Biology, read my biology books. Medical students, how many teeth are there in a mouth? 32. Why? Go back and ask your doctor why. Big genius with all your science and formulas and pre-med and post-med. Why? Why not 33? Why not 34? You need an even number? Why not 34? In other words, when the two stones hit each other in the sky and it resulted in an amoeba and a giraffe and a protozoa and it evolved into an ape and to a man, it just happened to fit to 32. That also just happened to happen? Or is it as the Torah says, that every single iota of man has significance to it? And the whole concept of chewing up the food is the connection. That's the hookup between the neshama and the guf. Where is the neshama? In the brain. Shehaneshama shebamechi. When you put on tefillin, you say shehaneshama shebamechi im shachoshe v'kochosai. Therefore, the Arizal says, you'll observe that Hashem placed 32 teeth in the mouth. The process of the teeth chewing up the food, the teeth are hooked up to the brain. You know it very, very fast. When you get a toothache, you see how well the teeth are hooked up to the brain. Drives you right out of your bird. So the Arizal says that the process of the 32 teeth chewing up the food, that's what hooks up the guf and the neshama. That's the connection, the point where these two connect, where the brain, if a Jew eats bikdusha for the right reasons, the brain is actually able to be nourished. The brain, which is spiritual, is able to be nourished from this physical food.
32
pairs of chokhmah. In other words, that's why the number 32, because the Sefer Yetzirah begins with the words Lamed Beis Nesivus HaChokhmah, that there exist in this world 32 pairs of chokhmah based on the Torah. The Torah begins with a Beis and ends with a Lamed. And that's the mokor of the 32 pairs of chokhmah. So you see, it's not a joke. Every single item has in it secrets and wisdom, tremendous wisdom.